7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Welcome, friends, to episode 29 of Color of Magic. As usual, I am your host, Daquan Watson, and we are getting along great here with my buddy, partner, and pal, Brian Allen. How you doing, dude?
Doing well. The parts of Texas open again Friday, apparently, so that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, tell me about it, man. That's going to be a little bit wild. We're still not there quite yet here in Washington, though. If you can do delivery and curbside, there's businesses that are doing it, and it's okay. But yeah, it's tough.
I don't think we're there yet either, but we're still doing it.
Well, having been a former Texan, I feel that, man. I feel it. I know how attitudes are down there. So we have quite a few things to talk about this week. So why don't we hop right in and talk about what did you learn last week?
I'm still learning about circadian rhythms because mine are all over the place, and I'm not alone in that. I'm sure if people try to get adjusted to some kind of schedule, I think I've had about 6 different sleep schedules in the past 3 weeks.
Dude, I feel that. Like, and we're in a rough situation because me and wife are both doing a lot of stuff on computers lately. So, you know, with us not having to go into an office or anything, we've been staying up late and then just getting up later.
Yeah.
And that's just become a thing, which is weird because I have people that, like, they'll see a message from me where they're like, dude, you sent that at like 3 in the morning? I was like, oh, yeah, I was still like editing a video. But yeah, it's interesting because here, which I know you don't deal with this in Texas, but here in the Northwest, we go through long summer days and spring days, but really, really short days in the winter. So we'll go from like sometimes 6 a.m. to like 10 p.m., sun will be up spring and summer. But then in the winter, you'll go to work when it's dark, you know, and leave work when it's dark. Like it might only be up from like 10 to 4. It's pretty crazy, and it messes with you for sure.
Yeah, I'm just imagining that. Mind-boggling.
And how are you dealing with that with, like, the kids not having, like, I guess no sleep schedule, I guess, since you're not having to get them up for school or anything?
I'm realizing how much of my schedule was tied to when they got up or when they had to be somewhere. And
I guess that makes sense.
Really having that.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's one of those things, not having kids, that I don't really come to appreciate enough sometimes, is that, you know, if they have after school programs or sports or whatever, like, you, that's what y'all are basing y'all's lives around.
Yep. And we're not one of those families that's in a whole bunch of school activities, but I mean, even like Jordan has tutoring, for example, or did have tutoring when we were having school. So that's just a little thing. Like, okay, you know, you go pick, you almost do like 2 rounds of pickups because I have 3 kids. So we pick up the first 2. Then Jordan will usually inform us. Sometimes he informs us, sometimes he forgets to, oh, okay, Jordan's not here. God, I hope he's got tutoring.
And then we'll yeah.
Okay, he's got tutoring. All right.
I could see that. Yeah, also, I want to let the listeners know that we did run into some internet issues down in Brian's part of the world today. So if something goes awry or sounds a little weird, we apologize. But we still want to get this episode out to you. So yeah, as far as what did I learn this past week? Interestingly, I was looking at some of our numbers from the last few weeks because it's weird. I'm not really a numbers geek, but when it involves a project I'm working on or my job or whatever, I really get into numbers and really like try to analyze things. And I think it's just a matter of like, if I'm going to put my name on something, like I want to know, are the things I'm doing relevant or working? And I was like, okay, the numbers seem a little bit down. And I'm like, well, that's a little weird. But then I started asking some other people and I was reading some articles and like podcast listening is down right now. Which is funny because you would think with people being in isolation, they would be listening to more podcasts. But the reality is people have more things to do at home because, you know, we're we're streaming and playing Magic or whatever. We're watching YouTube videos. People are streaming and watching, what's that, Tiger King or whatever, you know, right? That takes up time. And, you know, like you're saying, some people do have kids and still having to do homeschooling for some of them or whatever. But what I think we've come to realize, and this is kind of, if there is an interesting silver lining to all this stuff going on with the virus, is we are learning a lot of things about human behavior. You know, because I take something like the Tiger King and say that that's a right place, right time docuseries.
No joke. Right?
Because if we're not in isolation, half the people who watch it probably wouldn't have seen it. They'd have been busy going out to eat, doing whatever commutes they do or whatever. And kind of the same thing with podcasts, right? There was this huge explosion and people are listening to podcasts, and almost everybody I know can name 3 or 4 podcasts they've listened to or heard in the last year. But we're listening to them when we're like on the train on the way to work or in the car or watching your kids while they're at soccer practice. Like you have the podcast in your ear, or it's a way you unwind after a work day. Right. Like, but we don't have those things going on right now. So listenership's just down.
And I think Tiger King would have always caught on because it's such a crazy freaking story. But I think you're right that because everybody's home, we all kind of saw it at once. And then we went and told everybody that hadn't seen it.
Well, yeah, and everybody's spending more time on social media. You know, actually, here's another thing. I had this discussion with somebody years ago that it's the same thing I believe happened to Halo. Like, it came out in a time as everybody was starting to get, like, high-speed internet, DSL, whatever, in their homes, and it became the game, as far as first-person shooters, that you could play without being on a LAN setup.
Yeah.
And you could play with your friends, wherever. So that became the first person shooter that everybody played for the next, like, hell, 8 years or whatever. But if they were 6 months sooner or 12 months later, we're probably talking about something else being the big game.
Yeah. Because you know I don't know if it's ever been as hot as it was. Like you said, on the first, when it first dropped on it, it's been a long running series, obviously. But now I think part of it's because there are so many other ones. But it was first, you know, it hit right, as you said, when everybody was, that was so many people's first person shooter because of how it dropped.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Before,
you didn't have, like you said, great internet or a good PC. You weren't getting to play stuff like Quake.
Yep. And if you're the first one, you get the one to build the community. You become the standard everybody compares to, blah, blah. Like, it's the same reason, the same thing with World of Warcraft. Like, it came out at a perfect time where there was, like, a dead period in the MMORPGs. People were, like, there wasn't real innovation in, like, EverQuest or, you know, any of that stuff that was out. And then it was just WoW for a while. And, like, they filled the gap perfectly. And they were making a decent game on top of it. I'm not saying they just got lucky, you know. But it was also being able to turn people over from their other brands that they were able to cross-promote. Like, yeah, sometimes time... And Magic's a good example, too. I mean, it came out when there was nothing like it in the market. People were kind of growing... A segment was growing out of RPGs a little bit. TSR was starting to fall apart somewhat. And it was like, well, we have this other thing. Yep. And people forget that Magic wasn't even Richard Garfield's first thing he pitched to the Wizards of the Coast group at the time, which was like 3 people. But he literally brought a board game, which was Robo Rally, first, and they were like, well, we don't have the resources to produce a board game of this caliber.
Okay.
And then a couple of days later, he comes back by. He's like, well, I have this other thing I've kind of been dabbling in or whatever.
You dropped yet another what did we learn on me during the what did we learn, because I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, dude. And when it comes to game industry, I have a bunch of dumb, like, it's worthless trivia unless I'm ever at a pub or on Jeopardy. But, you know,
when you have a podcast, nothing is worthless trivia.
That's true. It's content. It's all content.
During a quarantine, there's absolutely nothing that is worthless because we're going to talk about it.
That's true. So, yeah, so let's get into some just topics in the Magic community here. One of the big ones this past week, past 2 weeks, really, has been the price of Secret Lair Ultimate Edition. And for those people that don't know, it's a 5-card set, which is 5 of the hardest to get fetch lands. So those are lands you sacrifice, pay one life, go search for a land of the basic type that they are, with, you know, forest, swamp, whatever. Generally, these hold a pretty good price tag. Matter of fact, we've even seen some of them go up over the last couple of weeks, as I guess they've been the topic of conversation and people are trying to get out in front of it. Now, you can probably go out and pick up one of each of the lands for a couple $100. Wizards of the Coast put this product out. They don't have an MSRP anymore.
Oh boy.
Which that is in itself isn't part of the problem. And I'll get to what I believe the problem is. And I cover this, actually, for those of you who want to go check it out. I have a full video on my YouTube page, youtube.com/PowerDragon. The big issue, though, is Blake Rasmussen, who's a good guy. I've worked with Blake. Totally above board. Don't have a problem with Blake at all. But he went on the professor's show on Tulare Community College and interviewed about the product, and they asked him some questions. Pretty basic answers, what you expect him to answer, because he can only answer certain things. One, because it's not really his job to produce the cards or make the decision of what goes into the cards. And two, I mean, he can only give you so much without blowing up marketing, right? And at one point, they asked him, like, well, what should these sell for? And he says, well, we believe they're going to sell at about $165. And that, to me, was the mistake. Because if you're going to have a product and say there's no MSRP,
yeah,
then just don't ever say a price. Now, granted, I'm not putting that on Blake. I don't know if it was just something he slipped up and said, or if it's something that he was told to mention, or what. I have no idea. So I'm not placing blame.
Your question, your first, I mean, he's not, you know, he's not like a political PR person. If somebody asks you a question, your first impulse with most people is generally to answer the question honestly.
Sure, but it's also okay to just say, like, well, our products don't really have MSRP, so it's just going to be based on whatever people can sell it for, right? And I think that's where the problem comes from, because now, if you go looking around the internet, and I on my video, I pull up screenshots from eBay, from Star City, from TCG Player, you know, so you can see what the going prices are. And you're going to have a hard time finding one for under $300. I know of one or two places that have them. I mean, tax and all, you're still going to be close to $300. But basically, $300 is the mark you're going to have to pay for it. And that's all fine and good. Like, it's a rare thing. Stores, depending on your size, are getting between, like, 4 and 10 or whatever. So, like, they're going to be pretty rare. The other issue is they talked about, as the year goes on, sometime toward the back end of the year, those individual cards will be available again. They won't be in the nice fancy box set or whatever, but they will be used for something toward the end of the year, so there are more out in the world. So that adds another weird factor on if you decide to buy it, you don't know how well they're going to hold their value, because, like, are they going to make three times as many at the end of the year? Are they going to use it as, like, hey, we want to help retailers out around the holidays? If you buy a box during the month of December, you randomly get one of these lands or something, right? There are a bunch of ways you could use it. And it'd be smart, honestly. It's a good marketing tool. It's basically bonus money for somebody in a purchase. Like, yeah, absolutely do it. Because even if the price comes down, minimum, you're probably still going to make like $20 bonus for buying a box from your store. So, yeah, of course you're going to do that.
Welcome to the crazy world of speculation over cards and prices and...
Yeah, that's just a thing we deal with. And my comparison is, if you're in the anybody who's a sneakerhead knows about this, right? And even if you're in some electronics, it happens too. But sneakers are a big thing where it happens right now. Like, they will put out, and it doesn't matter how much it costs the manufacturer to make. Let's just get that out of the way. It doesn't matter if it costs them 10 cents or $10,000. Like, it sells for what it sells for. We're the problem. We pay for it. It sells for that. So these shoe companies, which are probably producing a pair of shoes for, I don't know, probably like $10, right? If that. And then they go to these sneaker shows or whatever. And I've seen people, they literally have apps on their phone so they can know where somebody's going to do a secret drop that day or whatever. So say there's a big show in Seattle. They will pick a area like, I don't know, a place in the park near Pike Place or whatever. They will go set up. They will send out the tweet or whatever it is and then get bum rushed and they'll only have 500 pair or whatever. And they will sell those 500 pair for like 800 a shot. And then the people who buy them will immediately take them onto StockX, which is a site mm-hmm. where you can trade and sell shoes. And they'll sell them for $1,200, $2,000. Right? Like, you can't blame anybody but us buying them at that point.
Because you saw what happened with the tennis shoes this week, right?
No, I didn't, actually. What happened?
The you probably heard about the Michael Jordan documentary, the Last Dance. I don't know if you saw it or not, but it actually.
No, I heard about that.
Yeah, yeah. It's a 10-part documentary, people. But yeah, it's very good because ESPN very well done. And they dropped a new Michael Jordan show or the sneaker during the show, so of course they sold out immediately.
Yep, smart move. But all that being said, that's just supply demand. Whatever. It happens in other industries. We're just now getting hip to it in Magic because our industry just wasn't that way. But it is now. I mean, this is the world we live in. My problem with all of this is when I saw multiple threads on Twitter, on Facebook, where they were dogging stores, individual retailers, for selling one for like $300. Using the excuse of like, well, they probably only paid like $100 to get it. I don't know why they're having to charge me $300, whatever. And to me, like one, being a former retailer, I feel their pain. I do, because your choices are really either just sell it too cheap, and then all that person is going to do is buy it maybe 70% of the time or better, are going to go out and just flip it for three times that anyway. You can use it for a special marketing thing. You know, maybe run a tournament with like a, I don't know, when something similar came out, there was a, what was it called? It was a Commander's Arsenal. I think each store at most got like 5 or some small number. So I just ran an event. It had like a $10 entry fee or something. And then the top X places all got to pick the card they wanted or part, because it came with like limited sleeves and other stuff. You got to pick your thing out of that box, depending on your place. So if you won, you got the most expensive thing. Second most expensive thing out of it, whatever. And people were happy with that. And I still made my money selling it technically, but I did it as entry fees, right? That's one thing you can do.
Yeah.
The other is you just sell it and make your money because that's what the market is going for it. And I'll be honest. Okay. Side rant before I continue on. If you only ever show up to your store and buy something because your store owner has it for some significantly less price than the going market rate, you are not supporting that store. If you put on social media, well, I would support your store if, and it's your stuff was cheaper than everybody else, you're not supporting that store. You are going, and it's fine. I'm not saying you have to. I would, because I like having a store where I can go shop. Matter of fact, I have store credit that's enough to get me a booster box right now at my local store. I'm not going to use all that credit to get the box. I'm going to pay at least half in cash just so I can give them some money in a time where they need it. Just saying. But if you are chasing just the lowest price, you are just supporting yourself to get the lowest price. And that is totally okay. It's your money. It's your budget. You do what you got to do. But don't say you're supporting the store because you are absolutely not. Because the minute somebody else has a cheaper price, you're going there. Let's be honest about it. Even in my videos where I tell retailers, like one of the things you have to do is you have to figure out your unique value proposition. Because if anytime you say it's because we're going to be cheaper, you're not creating a customer. Because the minute somebody else is cheaper, you no longer have a customer. Okay, that aside, I can now continue.
Rants within rants on Color of Magic, folks.
I have to, because it's
and what learns inside. What are those little dolls called? There's another little doll inside.
The nesting doll, the Russian nesting dolls. Yeah.
That's how segments are. They're like nesting dolls, folks.
But here's the thing, right? When I see these people griping, the reality is, especially right now of all times, you have stores that are making 20% or less than they would on a normal month right now. Some of them are okay. Some are at like 50% if they're able to do mail order and some curbside stuff, or depending on what state they're in. But their sales are way down. They're getting to run no events. Half the products they want to order aren't being shipped or aren't available for one reason or another because the companies themselves are shut down and or not shipping. And they basically have the equivalent of a small stimulus package that could get them between 200 and let's call it 2,000, depending on how many you're getting, dollars worth of profit in a time where they're afraid to even know if they're going to have employees in a month.
That's what I'm saying. This is, you know, I'm like you. I didn't realize how many, because again, I'm a gamer. I'm, you know, largely at home, but I didn't realize how much I went out until I couldn't go out.
For sure. I think that
I could just go walk down the aisle of my local comic shop leisurely, talk to all the people at my local comic shop, and I had to. God, charge me $20 for the Spider-Man comic. I'll just get how happy I am going to be out walking the aisles again.
For me, and especially when I'm talking to people that are already like self-proclaimed introverts, it's not so much about going out and doing all these things and being around all these people. It's that you've lost the convenience to do it when you want to.
Yes.
Like if I'm just bored and I'm like, hey, you know what? Let me go down to the shop and pick up these supplies I need for a project. Like the fact that I just can't go down during normal hours and, you know, or I can't go without like, okay, let me make sure I have a mask on and do all this other stuff or whatever. Like I can't just pick up and go to the store and then come right back. Right. That's not a thing I can do anymore. Like that's the frustrating part.
One of my friends is talking about how he had to go meet a coworker because there are some items they had to exchange for a work project that's still going on. He said, Brian, it was like something out of a spy movie. I had to make him put the bag down on the ground and kick it over to me. You know, it's like, I can't believe this, but this is what we're having to do right now.
But, dude, that's the world we're in. Like, even the stores that I'm talking to that are doing curbside or deliveries or whatever, they're literally like, okay, cool. They're only letting you pay paperless. So they're not taking any cash in any way, shape, or form doing any type of exchange. When you pull up, the closest they'll get, you can either pop your trunk and they will put it in your trunk, or they will set it on the sidewalk, go inside, you were able to pick up the box.
Like a dealer.
Yep, those are your choices. You know? But yeah, anyway, what I'm getting at is anytime there's something limited, it's going to be valuable. Assuming the thing inside of it is sought after, right? Yeah. You can make a limited thing, but if it's just not desirable, it doesn't matter. But if it's a limited release product, it's like we're saying about shoes, right? If you make some generic Payless brand shoe and there's only like 1,000 of it, then like nobody's probably going to care except for the hardcore, most hardcore of like sneakerheads, right? But if you make a, like you're saying, a limited edition Michael Jordan shoe or Kobe Bryant shoe or LeBron shoe, then like, yeah, everybody's going to want it. And in this case, this is our Jordan, LeBron, Kobe shoe, right? It's just one of those things. But don't hate the person paying taxes, paying for employees, trying to manage their rent, you know, trying to manage just advertising, you know, navigating all the legal stuff or whatever, and hate them because they're going to make an extra $200. It just doesn't make sense. And they're not even like, I almost would understand, almost, if they were exclusive cards that they were only going to be available in there and there was no other versions to play with. Even if they weren't tournament legal, if you just wanted them for like your commander or whatever decks, then like I could see you almost being bothered by that because that's the only way to acquire them. But these are reprints. There's literally probably tens of thousands of each of those cards. There are actually tens of thousands of each of those cards out in the world. Like there's no reason to be that upset and angry at somebody, especially, like I said, in the current climate where we're just, these people are struggling. They don't even know if their store is going to be open in a month. And you're hating on them because they're making $200.
We've learned how much people like to complain during this crisis.
I mean, seriously, if anything, I've generally looked and been like, man, that's awesome. There's at least a way they could make another $1,000 here. You know, that's literally my thought. I'm like, it's not for me. I'm no longer a hardcore collector. Like, I already have those cards in different forms I can play with. So, like, I don't need it. Like, unless I just want to be a completist or I want to have that thing for posterity's sake that maybe I'll sell in 5 years when it's worth like $600 or $700 or whatever. Cool. But I'm not that person. So I don't need it. But somebody is willing to pay for that. And that is fine. And good for them. They're now maybe able to make rent depending on where they live or pay for a couple employees to still be around. Like, it's terrible to be mad at them for that.
Work, you know, if you have a thing people want, you get to set the price for it.
For sure. For sure. But anyway, that out the way, let's talk about something a little more fun and happy. We're going to go happy, sad today, I think is where we're rolling.
Man, I got to grab a chart now or float happy. Okay.
Yep. So we brought it down. We're going to climb the roller coaster back up. I don't know if you checked it out yet, but Arena, you can go and play Human Drafts as of this last update. And man, it is good. Everybody's enjoying it. Like, they are crushing it over there. Have you played in one of the drafts yet?
I have not played in one of the drafts. And now I got to ask, since you mentioned roller coaster, is that happy or sad? Because I hate those.
No, this is happy. This is totally happy. And I will say that, like, I don't know if you're aware, but and I actually know some people who weren't. I had to mention some people on stream because I didn't even notice. But as of last Thursday's update, you do have a free draft token on your account.
I saw that. I haven't used it yet because I'm like not great at draft, but I will because I have something I need to work on. One of the many aspects of my game I need to work on.
But it's still free cards. Bare minimum, you get 3 free packs out of the deal. Actually, I think you get 4 because I think you get 1 even if you get 0 wins in your draft because you play. So you go 7-3 till you get 7 wins or 3 losses, I think. But you can go in, and if you just don't beat anybody, you still get a pack.
If you
progressively win, you get more packs and or gems or whatever, and progressively more gems till you get up to 7. So it's pretty cool. I mean, the drafts are staying busy. They're going off pretty quick. I mean, when I got in and just went, because I made a video just so people could see, like, what does the interface look like or whatever? Now you're drafting with humans. So I have that video up as well, but I just wanted to try it out and go through it so I could speak to it when people ask. And it didn't take very long for the draft to queue up. I got in, it was maybe a minute, you know, so it wasn't like it was a long wait. Lots of people are wanting to draft. Plus, and it's a perfect confluence of things, right? It's a brand new set. You've got the free draft tokens people can use. People are in isolation and want to draft. And then you have people who just like to booster draft who can't go to their local stores and booster draft. Now they can draft with humans, you know, whereas before we're drafting against bots. And it's pretty neat. It's pretty cool.
One of the shops I used to play at, the large portion of the players had decided they hated standard. So they would all Friday want to do draft. And I basically always wanted to play just regular standard. And they would try to bribe me with things to get me to want to draft. It was hilarious.
You know, and that's the thing. I think we can get caught up with people being like, because even on my stream, I've had some people be like, hey, you're going to, I was like, I drafted once just so people can see it. But I'm a constructed player. Right, predominantly standard, but I'll play some other things. But I like spending the time putting decks together and then putting them into action and then navigating the metagame. That's what I do. But there's other people that there's another streamer I just started following recently. He's a local player. He's almost all limited. He goes to the limited Grand Prix. He likes talking about sealed and draft. Like, that's his jam. And that's okay. Like, we can all enjoy the game different ways. So I, even though I'm not going to draft a lot, I am happy for my friends that there is a draft setup that they enjoy now and they can all go draft.
And we talk about as content creators, you know, okay, what's your thing that you're going to do? It's different than what everybody else is. And for them, it's, hey, they're going to be strictly draft.
Yeah. And I think it's totally fine. I think it's tough. Matter of fact, I had this discussion, which, by the way, Brad Nelson, if for some reason you're listening to our podcast, which I hope you are, I'm apologizing. I tried to send him a message on Twitter, but I couldn't send him a direct message. I just had to send him a post and he didn't respond. But he had posted something about Ikoria, and I can't remember what it was. It was kind of just a basic evaluation of something. And a dude came on and he was just like going off on Standard, right? And I just said, like, hey, I'm just saying it sounds like you haven't played recently, but here's what Standard kind of looks like. It's pretty diverse. There's this going on, whatever. And dude just started getting like super mad and going off about how he doesn't like Standard and it looks like Yu-Gi-Oh and blah, blah. And I was like, it really doesn't though. Like, I've played many other card games and it's not like that. Like, you know, like, but we went back and forth and back and forth. And eventually I was like, okay, this is not the purpose of this. I'm not trying to start a fight on somebody else's Twitter thread. Like, well, and even at the point where I'm like, look, I don't even know what happened with this discussion. I was not meaning for this to be contentious. Like, it's not, you know, cool. Oh, no, I said, I don't even know what happened here. Didn't really mean for this to become a thing. It's all good, dude. Like, you find something you enjoy and enjoy it, right? And that's literally what I put. He came back with, well, no, it's not all good because you're talking about this and saying I don't know and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, whoa. Like, so eventually I'm like, cool, I'm just out. Like, I can't do this. But that's the thing, right? It's one thing to express you dislike a thing. Because we're all welcome to that. We're all going to have things we like, dislike, preferences for whatever reason. But to just make crazy outlandish statements because you don't like a thing is so... Well, I'm just going to say it. It's just childish. Like, how many times have you seen somebody say that they don't like a movie or a TV show or a sport or whatever, and then they just go to disparage it, even though they don't watch it? It's like me. I don't watch American Horror Story because I don't enjoy a lot of horror movies. There's a very select few I really enjoyed. So I just didn't bother with the TV show. But when I have friends that are excited about it, I didn't go and be like, ugh, I don't know why y'all are watching that junk. I just like, cool. I just let them enjoy it. Right now, it does suck when it's something I did appreciate. And then like the show, like Community is a good example, right? Love the show, but there's a point where it started to fall off a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, yeah, they sort of changed the characters this way. And you can sort of tell where there was some infighting or whatever. That's a little disappointing. So, like, I'll make a comment about it and then I'll leave it. And then if somebody wants to have a conversation about that particular aspect, we can get into it. But I don't need to, like, go bashing it or whatever because it became something I no longer enjoyed.
Oh, the next time you're in town, you're going to have to come to Backdoor Comedy Club with me. Because that's exactly the way it works. If you like something the other comics don't like...
Oh, man.
It is time for the airing of grievances, so to speak.
All right. I will hold you to that invite. Now, matter of fact, I will be in town, assuming we get to fly planes and do stuff.
Yeah.
In August, they've moved the date for the Hunter Burt Memorial Open. So we went from April to August. And I'm still going to be doing commentary for that. I told them if they need me, I'll let them know I'm still available. So I'm likely going to come down a day or two early. So if you want to do that, I'm willing to go check out the comedy club with you.
All right.
And it's already going to be in the Dallas area. I'll have a rental car. Like, it's not a big deal. We can make it happen.
And he's going up for open mic. I heard that too. I'm going to just throw that out there. DeCore's going up for open mic. We said.
I might. I got a little material. You know, I ain't afraid to talk in front of some people and get booed.
Here's that Ikoria is crazy. Am I right?
I don't know. It wouldn't be magic material. I know where that works. That's a very small, like, that's a room at a convention that's got maybe 20 people where that material will go off. Like, no, I know better. But no, really, anyway, it's like to wrap that up, like the whole thing with the human drafts is that people are enjoying it. Wizards is probably making a bunch of money on it because I see people posting about they're in like their 13th draft or their 20th draft or whatever. Yeah. Over like almost a week now, by the time they listen to this, it'll be a week that it's been live. Like that's awesome. I mean, that means you have people drafting two or three times a day, you know, putting in like 6 to 10 hours drafting and playing. That's fantastic. That means they hit the mark. It's doing what it's supposed to. Players are happy. So again, like, again, I'm not sitting here saying like Wizards is perfect. Obviously, I've obviously even just complained about like the Secret Lair situation. But like, if we're gonna complain when things are bad, we gotta also give kudos when things are good. You got to be fair on both sides. Otherwise, you just sound like a complainer, and nothing's gonna make you happy. So like in this case, the drafting, I think they got it right.
It sounds like it. I will jump in and report back.
Now, we're at the top of the roller coaster.
Oh, again, I hate all parts of the roller coaster. So is this happy or sad? This is sad?
This is about to be sad. Because I'm not a roller coaster person myself, but it works for the analogy. One of the things, though, I have seen from a lot of people that are drafting is how important the companions are in a lot of their drafts.
Yeah, I didn't think about that in terms of draft, but now that I do, yeah, I can see where that would be.
Yeah, and companion as a whole have been very powerful in multiple formats so far. And one of the things I will say, if somebody wants a good video, actually, and I share some of these same views, but he goes into much more detail, and I think with pretty good explanation. You can look up Jim Davis. He's a pro Magic player. He's sponsored by BCW Supplies. He's got a YouTube channel. Look him up. Good dude. At least everything I know about him is a good dude. I haven't heard too many people complain about him. And he gives a fair and measured discussion on companions. And the one thing I will say is, despite what the companions do or how easy they are to play or build around or whatever, I think that's all, there's varying levels of degrees to each of them and arguments that can be made or whatever. So I don't really want to approach it from that standpoint. But I want to say the biggest thing I think that has gone ignored is that it's a free eighth card. And you kind of have to start looking at deck building, unfortunately, as a way of, you almost look at it in the sense of, can I afford to play without this card if I'm already close to the deck building restriction? Because if I am, I should just play the card as an extra card. Like, I mean, I saw a deck that wasn't even playing creatures that played Kahira.
Okay.
Because it's just a free card. Like, yeah. I mean, if something happened and you just need an emergency blocker on a turn, or your opponent sided out all his creature removal or something, you're like, cool, I'll just beat you with this 2-power guy or whatever, 3-power guy, right? And I think that's the hardest part of these cards and whether their ability, or really just where their effect comes in. Because, yeah, the abilities are good if you build around them, and that's all fine and sexy or whatever. But you're getting to do it at little to no cost. A good example is Kahira. It's the 5-cost, or yeah, it's a 5-cost, 5/4. You can only play odd, or you have to put, you can only play things that are 3 or more in the green blue one.
Okay.
You have to play cards that cost 3 or more. But you have a deck like Fires of Invention that only really played things that cost 3 or more. Even if they're playing Brazen Bar or Bone Crusher Giant, those each cost 3, though they have an adventure you can play for 2. But they're basically playing all cards that cost 3 or more. So even if they didn't ever need the ability of that card, Karuga is the card. Don't know if I got the name right earlier. But even if you don't need the actual ability to draw a card or two from it, you can just play it as an extra 5/4 when you need it, because your deck already fits the deck building requirement. So there's literally no opportunity cost lost there except for the 1 sideboard slot.
True.
Yeah, and I think that's the problem. And one of the things Jim brought, because I actually had this same thought, like, and I'm glad he actually mentioned 3 or 4 different solutions. But basically, what if there was a way, and we can change the rules, because one of the things he pointed out is that we've changed a legend rule multiple times in Magic. So changing a rule is totally fine to do. But what if when you played a companion, in some way, shape, or form, we balanced it to where you got one less card. So say you start with a companion, and instead of drawing 7 for your first hand, you draw 6. And then the companion is your 7th card. And then if you mulligan, you draw 5, and then it's your 6th card, or whatever, on down the line.
Okay, that's an interesting way to handle it. I can see that.
Yeah, to me, that feels totally fine. Because the problem, and don't get me wrong, we're still way early in the, it's been a week or whatever, right? Like, a lot can still happen where we figure these out or to play around them or whatever. But especially when you're talking about older formats, I think that's mostly figured out at this point. Like in Standard, we're learning some things. We've learned to play around Garuda. Decks are learning to play around Luris. Like, things are happening. But I don't know if that can say, same thing could be said for older formats. We just have to wait and see, I guess, another week or two and see what happens. But I would be totally okay with them just costing us a card. And then you still get the ability to play it from outside the game, blah, 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 all that stuff. And you have access to it. But right now, there's no cost to doing it. And I've even had the thought, like, I'm building deck lists, and then I'm looking at the list and going like, what could I change to fit in one of these companions? Like, I don't need to, but it's like, if I only have to change, say, like, 2 different sets of 4, and there's reasonable replacements, and I get to play a companion, that might be worth it, right? Because remember, like, you played Raw Deal, right?
Yep.
They introduced the pre-match phase, where you basically got a different set of cards to play to set up the rest of the game. But when they did that, we decided to fundamentally change how the game works and then just made more cards for that. And that just became part of the game. So unless we're going to completely change how Magic works and just have companions all the time or other companion-like things all the time.
And I don't think anybody wants that.
Yeah, I don't even think R&D wants that.
Because it wasn't good for Raw Deal. I don't believe.
I think it initially wasn't. I think as more cards became available, it was. But it was very warping when it first came out. And I think kind of in the same thing here. We're seeing such a huge shift because it's changing the way we even think about our opening hands. By the way, decks are built. You know, like, you can't even play traditional pacing games for tempo because they're still going to have that extra card. You know, so things are just so drastically different right now.
It's reminiscent of Once Upon a Time where here's a card. You're getting to play the card. And we know what happened Once Upon a Time.
But I'll say this, though, right? I think, and this is me speculating. I have no insight onto anything to do with Ikoria that's not already public. But I feel like the current way they're being used is not the way R&D intended. When you have decks that, like I said, have no creatures, but are just like, cool, I'm going to play this companion just because.
Yeah, I wouldn't think that's the way they meant for that to work, but
yeah, like, even if they never cast it, it's just like, it's a bonus card. Why wouldn't I? Right? Like, if I feel I could do with like 2 copies of something or 3 in my sideboard instead of having that 4th one, then like, cool. I'll take the gamble and play the extra card.
Yeah, there's no good reason not to.
Yeah. I mean, or like you're saying, like decks like Fires. Like, they don't really need a Karuga, but why not play it? I mean, it does a little bit for that deck, but not really. Not in my experience playing against it, but why not play it? It's literally going to always be a free creature you have access to. And I think that's the problem with it. Like, they're fitting into all these different decks doing these things when, like, that's... I would venture to guess that's not really their intention. So I would not be surprised if sometime in the next month that we hear something that they're going to change the way either they work or how they affect your opening hands or something or whatever, just to balance them a bit. Because right now, because like, think about this. If you were playing Fires and you only got 6 cards to start with instead of 7, then maybe you don't want to play a companion. Because hitting every land drop, getting that early Teferi or removal card is pretty important. So maybe you don't want to take that risk anymore. I don't know, but it's something to think about. Now, we can take that roller coaster back on up to a happy point.
All right. At the top of the roller coaster, I'll take your word for it.
But no, I just really want to talk about how stores are actually dealing with all this stuff right now. I mean, I'm seeing a lot of stores running tournaments through MTG Melee. They're using Challenge, which is another tournament software. I see a lot of people doing the F&M at home thing, making sure they get all the codes out. I've seen people doing different promotions. They're doing deck building contests. They're just doing all kinds of things to really produce what they can and keep engaging their store audience, even though they're not there. I mean, have you seen anything from the local stores in the Dallas area that they're doing?
I have not, but that's because I really hadn't been able to even really talk to very many people.
Fair. Yeah, the one thing I will say, they're for people who don't know, Wizards has been doing a promotion that if you pre-order cards or a box of Ikoria from your store, they have some cool digital things that you get. I believe it's the trophy pet, a card back, and something else. I think it's maybe an exclusive card. Whatever you call the card styles. So that's a cool thing you get. And then, of course, if you pre-order your box, you get the physical, whatever we're calling the Godzilla, the 7/5 trample or 7/3 trample, and then your creatures die if they take lethal damage to your power instead of your toughness. So that's a cool thing you get. Anyways, there's a lot of freebies you're getting if you pre-order boxes. I'm also seeing a lot of stores for the first time setting up their online stores to take pre-orders. There, as a matter of fact, I'm going to be helping one of them out. See, the one I was telling you about to start the show, that I'm going to be testing using store credit on their thing because I'll be the first one to have done it, I guess. But they've got that going on. Some of them are setting up Facebook stores. I mean, it's just really good to see that these stores are finding ways to still be able to make it, even though they can only like deliver stuff right now or mail stuff. Like, they're still at least finding ways to keep the doors open. And admittedly, this isn't everybody. So, you know, support your stores as best you can when you can, if you want a place to go back to. But it's just cool to see the ingenuity. And not only that I'm seeing stores report that like, oh man, we got our site set up and we got our first 5 orders. Or, you know, we've seen our orders increase from like 1 a day to 4 a day or 5 a day, right? So it's working and people are responding. And if I can say anything, like, just keep responding and keep helping out your stores, because it is a very, very, very tough time for them right now. Yeah. And it's already not a crazy lucrative business for a lot of them. Because the thing to remember about small business, most small businesses are closed in 3 years. So most of these stores are still very, not most, but a lot of them are still going to be very young. So they're in their growing periods. They haven't even hit their main stride to know what their consistent monthly income should be. And then this happened that could stunt all that growth. You know, their beginning P&L plans and all the stuff they had, like, don't mean squat right now.
You couldn't have prepared for this because it hasn't happened since 1917.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, so they are operating basically in the dark. Like, they don't know what's going to happen. They don't know what their business plan looks like going forward. I mean, it's cool. I'm seeing networks of retailers doing a lot of stuff to help each other out and try to clear up some information. And, you know, everybody's sharing tips and tools on how they've been able to do stuff. And that's great. I mean, that's super awesome. But yeah, your store is going to be on a bumpy ride. They're going to be making some mistakes. But at least if you have the knowledge or you have the insight, help them get through it. Like, whatever way you can, because it's not easy for any of them right now. Even the ones that are very experienced. I mean, you're talking about even big retailers like Card Kingdom. They've shut down their retail space at their 2 Mox stores. I mean, they just said straight up, like, cool, it's done. We're not even doing deliveries or anything. Like, they, them, Channel Fireball, and I think Star City as well, they each had a period where they weren't even shipping stuff out. And they were just like, cool, we're just not having the warehouse people. And I can tell you, having been at Card Kingdom before, they have a ton of employees. I'm not going to give hard numbers, but they have a ton of employees, and you can't get stuff packed out at the rate they do, consistently as they do, as fast as they do, without having a bunch of people in a room.
Yeah, there's no way.
Yeah, it just doesn't happen. So I totally understand. When people are like, I don't know why they shut down, or blah, 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 or they have the resources. It's like, to physically do what they need to do, it's, you can't do that without a pile of people in a room pulling, packing, verifying, you know, emailing people, blah, blah, like all, there's tons of moving parts going on to make sure your package goes from order to shipment in 24 hours.
Cars don't ship themselves, folks.
Yeah. But it's cool. Like I said, everybody's finding ways, and it'd be interesting to see kind of how we come out of the other side, because we're looking at, like, around here, around May 4th or 5th is what a lot of things are looking at and targeting to see where the next guidelines change in this area. So it's a thing. But like I said, it's cool seeing that stores are actually finding ways. And I think I wasn't sure how many stores were going to survive, but I feel like more of them will be here than not when we get to the other side of all this.
And a lot of things sound like some things, you know, that, I mean, some of the stuff they'll be able to use after all this is over.
Oh, absolutely. That's the biggest part, is they've learned a lot of things and set up a lot of things that are just going to become part of their business, which is great, because I'd love to see more stores where, like, if I'm looking for a thing and I need to order or make a purchase and have it delivered or whatever, I'd rather do that from a local store than, like, I don't know, Amazon or something, especially if the price is going to be under a $10, hell, sometimes under a $5 difference. I'd just rather get it local. But that aside, we got all that done. We
talked about roller coaster. That was good.
Yeah. You know, we talked about all of our magic news. We did all that. But
Yeah, now I realize the happy part now. Okay, now we gotta go back.
Exactly. Yeah. This isn't even happy or sad. This is more just more of a talking about reality a little bit as we move up to the dinner table. And I feel like we touched on this briefly last week when we had Emma on the show. But, and I kind of wanted to just get your insight too, and we can just kind of have a back and forth here. But just seeing how differently, and not even just in magic, but I mean, we are a magic and gaming show, obviously. But how differently people of color have to promote themselves through various social media channels than non-people of color. Because, you know, even on my site, like I said before, I do a lot of number crunching. I do a lot of A-B testing to just understand what's working and what's not. And I can tell you, like, regardless of the subject matter that I put on my videos, say on YouTube, the ones where I use my face. Now, granted, I'm not the nicest looking dude in the world. Let's be real here. I'm not a Denzel or a Will Smith or anything. But those don't perform as well.
Wow.
So when you see other people doing the same thing in your space, putting themselves, literally, there's people I've seen, like, they're putting their face over character faces or whatever in their thumbnails or whatnot. And those videos that they're doing aren't necessarily any better than their normal stuff, but they perform equal or better. It's just like, man, that's frustrating. Because the minute you click on my video, you're going to see me, right? So it's not like, even like it's a secret. But if I lead with that, it doesn't perform as well. Now, I don't know if that's been your experience or if you see that even in other stuff. I don't know, where you're talking about outside of magic, because you do live performances and things.
I haven't looked at it in terms of my YouTube and Twitch. And now it's the first thing we do after we finish the podcast to go look and see if there's a difference.
Yeah, it's just an interesting thing, because I don't think it's something we talk about or think. And here's the thing, too. I'm not I don't want this to come off as me saying that, like, the average Magic person who's in YouTube is racist, because that's not where I'm going with this. I think sometimes we are just more apt to follow, listen to, click on, whatever, people that more obviously relate to me or are like me, right? Like, I think that's the human mindset. And I think it's very subconscious. So I don't think anybody's...
It's a high school cafeteria mentality. If you go, you walk into the cafeteria, you see a group, in our case, if you see a group of white people at the table, and then see a group of black people, we're probably going to gravitate toward the table full of black people first.
Sure. And that's what I'm saying. I don't think it's about anybody just saying, like, oh, there's a black dude on there. I don't necessarily want to click on it. But I think it's like, if it's next to another one and the other person looks like you, it's probably like, oh, I'm going to click on this one and see what this person's all about. And I think it's just a subconscious thing that you don't even think twice about. So that's one of those weird hurdles that I don't think people even consider, that, like, I have to decide when and where I think it's important enough to have my face on a thing. Like, sometimes, like, when I put out the video for tips for stores to be cleaner, healthier, you know, players not to pass germs around, whatever, in game stores, when this whole virus thing was starting to get underway and, you know, we were talking about possible isolation or whatever, I went out, got with the store owner, went to his store, we filmed the video, we put it together. I literally stayed up late that night, woke up early the next day, got it up online, shared it around, important information, and it was a super slow, low-performing video. Now, it gradually got better, you know, over time, but it was just like, man, and, you know, but I felt it was important to put myself on there, show me using a mask, because let's be honest, in colored communities, covering your face is not the best thing to do.
No, I still get nervous every time I have to go outside and put a mask on. They're like, is there going to be a cop or a store owner somewhere who has somehow not heard about this?
And, dude, no lie. I went to the post office the other day, and I was like, okay, I'm going to make sure my hands are visible, and the one hand that's holding something is clearly holding a package. Like, while I had a mask on. I mean, yeah. It sounds paranoid, but it's just like, I know I could be making some people uncomfortable, you know.
Yeah. I remember when I was at E3 one year, if you've ever seen the video game Payday, where you basically play a bank robber, they're giving away this great swag bag that had, you know, like, one of the things in it was one of the masks that they wear in the game. And they're like, I'm not even going to take the bag. I am not walking down the street to Los Angeles with a bank robber mask in a bag. It's just, no.
Not even. And again, not a single day of the week.
That wasn't even close to the only thing in it. But that's the thing I saw. That, like, this could easily get me shot. And the bag is, I don't remember what the slogan was, but it's probably something about stealing money, you know, because it's a payday game.
Sure. But that's what I'm saying, though, right? So I put this video up, and I made the conscious decision of, not even just for people in general, but even for other people of color, to be like, yes, even I am wearing this mask, right? Like, I understand what the indicator is. I understand the difficulty this is going to be for some people, but I'm putting this front and center on this video, on this thumbnail. Now, the video, obviously, I was just speaking and, you know, had voiceover and whatever. I wasn't actually, like, wearing the mask in the video, but it was just the impact of, like, this is the reality of things to the point I'm willing to do this. And like I said, later on, eventually got a little traction and it was cool. But it was just, like, disappointing to see, even with people talking about it and me sharing it on social media, and people were talking on some of the threads where I shared it, but those people still weren't watching it. At least not initially, you know? And, like, that was the frustrating part of just, like, knowing that had I just put that video up, and I say knowing, it feels very much like, had I just put that video up and didn't have myself on it, didn't have myself wearing the protective mask, like, it probably would have got more views right out of the gate. And that's the tough part, I think, is just, and again, I'm not necessarily blaming anybody. I'm not saying, like, it's an overtly racist thing. You know, that's totally not the point of discussion. It's just understanding that there are a lot of situations where we as people of color have to determine, can we promote ourselves the same way that other people do?
Well, we were talking a little bit before the podcast just about all the various things you have to do anyway, just to like to get a YouTube video, to even have that great first hour that we're all looking for. And it's the checklist is already ginormous. And then when you think about these implications too, it's just more things you got to try to figure out, more square pegs to attempt to try to fit in the round hole, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing. Like, and I think that's unfortunately what gets lost in the conversation sometimes is people take it as sounding like, oh, well, why does everything have to be like against you? And it's like, no, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying just some things are ingrained to the point that you have to decipher these things to break through that to make it a norm. Because obviously, like, I have people that comment on my videos and whatever, and, you know, I'm slowly building a Twitch channel. Like, so it's not like people are saying, like, oh, there's a black guy playing Magic, I'm not going to go watch him. Like, that's not it at all. But it's to the general populace, there are some barriers you have to break through. And that's not even talking about the fact that, like, the code switching thing, right? Like, if there's certain places I know my stuff is going to show up, I will use certain language and I will present myself a certain way. If I don't know, well, there's a whole other mode that's going to be enacted, you know?
The well-spoken mode? Is that the one?
You know what I'm talking about. Like,
absolutely, though.
You know, but even Emma said that the other day, right? Like, because she's living out on the West Coast now or whatever, and she's from the South or whatever, like, she knows there's certain ways she's speaking or whatever to be accepted in certain, especially in the gaming community as a woman. Like, I have to speak a certain way, I have to act a certain way, you know, whatever. But then when she's around family and everybody else, whole different ballgame. Right? These are things that happen in the world. And here's the worst part, honestly, is I think people don't notice it because they get used to you using that other tone. Right. So like if I go to a good example, right, when I had my business and if I went to a chamber of commerce meeting or whatever, like they were only ever going to see me a certain way. So they never noticed there was a difference happening. And because I was just saving myself the headache, you know what I mean? Like, cool. I know how I need to walk into this meeting. I got this covered. But if they were to come hang out while we were watching wrestling or the Super Bowl, yeah, they might get a slightly different person. But yeah, do you ever run into that? Actually, now I'm thinking about it, when performing or when you're doing one of the comedy shows or something.
Oh, all the time, people will be like, you know, it's just it's. I mean, it's just a little bit. I feel like, you know, I've worn so many different roles, like reporter, comedian. Because for recording all the things, like everybody's like, the experience every comedian has, you know, oh, well, quickly, tell me a joke. That happens to nobody else. If I run to the doctor at a party, I don't ask him to operate on me. But everybody immediately wants you. And you might not want to do it right then. Like, it's nobody else. I don't ask anybody for plumbing advice if I find out that's what they do. But
here's the thing, though. Like, have you ever done a set or told a joke and then people been bothered because it wasn't black enough?
Oh, God. I was on a radio show one time, and the guy went to commercial break so he could tell me that it wasn't black enough.
Oh, for real? Like, bro, went to commercials? That's crazy.
So then
you never told me this.
And we hadn't discussed it beforehand. It was like crazy. Like I said, we did the whole, you know, okay, it's not black enough. So I come back from commercial break. I'm trying to help the man out because it's his radio show. So I'm trying to, you know, speak to the audience that he has. And I mentioned a local nightclub. It was a gospel station. Wait, we got to go back. We're taking another commercial break. You can't say nightclub. You literally just told me it wasn't. Yeah. For lack of a better term, you know, because he was an older gentleman. You just told me it wasn't hip enough. Now I can't say nightclub. I have no idea what you want for this set.
Yeah, man. It's one of those tough things, just trying to navigate that stuff sometimes. And again, I don't want this to come off to anybody listening as a like, woe is me or whatever. Because to be fair, I'm not killing it on YouTube, but I'm getting up there now. Now I'm quarter of the way to being monetized, so I'm doing a little something. Killing
it. Don't let him fool you.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, I'm doing a little something. So I'm not upset or anything. That's not at all the situation. It's just creating awareness, because that's mostly what we're trying to do on this show. Like, I feel like, especially when you see the downvotes and stuff we get, I feel like people believe that we're complaining or being angry about a thing. And that's not even my mindset. Like, that's not what I'm about. That's not what the show's about. Like, we're just strictly wanting to create awareness. And on this topic, like, the next time you go listen to somebody or click on a thumbnail or whatever, like, look at the content for what it is. Like, if the subject seems good, then cool, enjoy it. If, you know, in your case, if you're telling a joke and somebody's like, cool, that doesn't matter if you're black or white, you're just telling a funny joke. You know, if there's two videos on YouTube that you can click on and there's a black guy's face and a white guy's face, like, just look at the subject and then click on the subject you want to listen to, you know, like, or whoever's got more views or whatever. It looks like it's a better video. Like, don't judge it on just the image, you know, if you're making your decision. That's all I'm saying, is just like, challenge the things that you see that look similar, but aren't necessarily. And just put it in perspective. And if nothing else, like I said, the real awareness factor is just know that there are a lot of things as a person of color that you do have to navigate that other people don't. And I get it, because again, it's that thing of, you don't know it's a thing if you don't have to deal with it.
Yeah.
So it's just awareness. It's not about calling anybody names or being mad about anything. You know, it's just like saying, hey, be aware that even us, as we're promoting the show, we have to do certain, like, we even talk at times, like, do we want to talk about this subject? Do we want to say this thing? You know, like, there are things we have to navigate even just doing the show because of the topics and who we are, which is tough, but, you know, that's what we signed up for.
Yeah. We say we don't speak for the black congregation, but once you have a podcast and you're black, you are in some sense speaking for the black congregation.
Yeah, we're one of the voices. We're one of the voices. Only other thing I want to throw out this episode is, I think I mentioned to you the group online called The Cookout.
Yes.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, for people that don't know, they're mostly a gaming group, but they do have some people that are cooks because they do some cooking on their Twitch channel as well. But they do a lot of stuff for minorities, people of color, you know, trans, LGBT, as far as the gaming space goes. They set up meetups in different cities. They do stuff with conventions. Just a good, solid group of people. You know, they do a lot to try to raise those faces and awareness in the gaming community. And it was funny because I submitted paperwork to them, I believe, in December. But their whole group is all volunteers, so nobody's really making any money. I mean, so obviously some of them get some freebies or some kickbacks from some of the game companies, but there's no real money being made. Like, these are volunteers. And I guess the couple of people that were dealing with all the massive amount of potential applications actually finally approved me. So now when you see my stream down below, I have a little badge that is a proud member of The Cookout. So that is a thing now. So I'm happy about that. And you know, I will probably volunteer with them, help with some different projects or when they're doing some type of charity stuff. So you'll likely hear me mention it again in the future. And the other news is I will be doing I guess this week I actually am on Wizards' list of featured content creators. So that's been pretty awesome. And I have a few people that came to my stream specifically because they saw it over on Wizards Things. That was kind of awesome.
Nice.
Thursday, by the time people are listening to this, I will probably be live already on stream. I'm going to be on their main page. I am doing noon to 3 and 9 to midnight Pacific time. So probably be doing some giveaways. So if you catch this early enough in the day, you should come over and say hi. There might be a chance you get something. Otherwise, just come say hi and just hang out, because you can catch me on stream. But anyway, Brian, why don't we tell everybody how they can find you on all your social stuff?
All right. I am DL Caesar on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram. And our family YouTube channel is Alan's Ever After.
Awesome. As usual, I am Power Dragon, PowerDragn. And you can find me on just about all social media. And mostly, though, lately, doing a lot on YouTube and doing some streaming. So you can find me on Twitch on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays, 9 p.m. to midnight. Other than that, I think that's where we're going to wrap it up. So I want to say thanks to everybody for listening. And whenever you're listening, wherever you're listening from, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night, and stay healthy and take care of yourselves. If you have a chance, please check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us on Facebook at Color of Magic. We're also over on Twitter and Twitch at Color of MTG. And we have a website you can check out, colorofmtg.com. Please share our episode with your friends and help us grow our base. As always, every little bit helps, and we appreciate your support.